Hi, and welcome to the MVC Storefront, Part 16. This is a real-world application building exercise. My name is Rob Connery. I work at Microsoft. Email is robcon@microsoft.com. You can send me an email there with any questions, or feel free to leave a message on this blog. Beginning with your feedback, as always, one of the big things that came out of the last episode, which was a refactoring and code review episode with Ayende Rahin, was the membership debate that we got into. And what he suggested was to remove the reliance on the ASP.NET membership system and instead make it a little bit more pluggable. And at the time, I was horrified. I thought, I'm not going to rebuild membership from scratch. But what I think he was getting at more was the reliance and the coupling of the membership system, because, you know, there's other membership schemes out there, primarily something like Active Directory, or perhaps even something like OpenID, which I'm going to talk about today. So that was further reinforced by a lot of comments on my blog, and a lot of people just said, time to update, time to move along. And that's, you know, that's good feedback, especially Chad's comment about it being really, really over-empowering, or not over-empowering, but overpowering, I guess is the word I'm thinking. And you know, I sort of agree with that. And so what I decided to do, as I thought it through, was to kind of move on and split out my membership system and accommodate for other authentication systems, but also split things out a little bit more coherently. So in rethinking this, it kind of came to me that there's really three systems involved here, not just one user system. It's actually three. There's authentication, who is this user? There is personalization, what do they like? And then there is authorization, what can they do? So those are three very distinct separate services, and you can use three very distinct separate services for each. So with authentication and authorization, yes, you can use ASP.NET membership. You can also use LDAP or Active Directory. You can split those apart, you can authenticate with OpenID, and you can run your own authorization as you need to. On and on from there, and every single site has its own needs for personalization. So the core thing here is that I am not writing a banking application. I am not writing some massive piece of software where I really need to have hardcore membership rules. What I'm trying to do is, I got to keep this in mind, sell stuff. So along the lines of that, I really need to make sure that what I implement here is really simple, and I have to remember that since I'm trying to sell stuff, I have to get out of the way. I have to stop talking. I've got to take the application and basically make it as simple as pie for the user to buy stuff. So I'm going to show this slide one more time. This is what we're trying to do. So with this mantra in mind, I've reworked membership. I'm going to show you in this episode how I've done it. And I've split it out, and I'd love to hear your feedback. And I think it's a lot more scalable. I think it's a lot more pluggable. And in the end, I think we have a winner. One thing that's become very clear to me in working with Ayende over the last few days is that my concept of a user and authorization and personalization are all munged together too tightly. You can see that here when you're looking at the SQL user repository. This is one thing he homed in on really quickly, and he did not like this stitching. Oren didn't, and you know, to be honest, I didn't either. It bleeds right here. This is not a good abstraction, and so today, what I'm going to do is I'm going to completely rethink and blow this stuff away. Now, I have it all backed up, so I'm not worried if I decide to go back to where I was. The concept here is that I need to start again. And really, at the core of the problem is, what is a user to our system? A user lives in the membership system. A user lives inside of our database here. A user lives inside the ASP session, HTTP context state as a user. There's lots of ways to define a user. The easiest possible thing I can do is make it as simple as possible to allow who's ever going to be taking over this application in the future to implement what they think a user is. So that's what I'm going to start with doing today. First and foremost, I'm going to remove this table from the database and start all over again, because I'm just not comfortable with the idea of a user in the system. Next, I'm going to go back here to my user tests, and while I don't think I'm going to blow them all away, I will, actually yes, I'm going to blow all these tests away. I'm going to start from scratch. Because really, a user is the person who's using the application, not necessarily something I want to quantify in the database. What I do want to quantify in the database is a buyer. And even then, I don't even really care about their first name and last name. It doesn't tell me anything. The things that I do care about are things like, you know, maybe IP address that'll tell me their geographic location, perhaps whether they're male or female. All of those things I can get during checkout when they buy stuff. I can pull information from their address. I can do a little bit of information on their billing lookup, like maybe do some first name analysis. Or you ask them, male, female. Maybe I don't even ask that. The point being is there's a lot of ways I can figure out who this user is in terms of a buyer, so I can do some reporting at the back end. I don't really need to have a user's table in this system. So what I'm going to do right now is challenge that hypothesis by doing a bunch of unit tests here and seeing what I come up with. And here we go. I'm implementing the first of my three new services to the application. Those three services are authentication, authorization, and personalization. Now, it might seem that authentication and authorization are the same, but they're not. I'm going to ask you to hold on, and I'll explain what I mean by that in just a minute. Well, so the first thing I did was to create a test. Authentication service can authenticate using username and password. This dictated the presence of an interface and an implementation, which I created. And then also, I have one method here called isValidLogin. So I'll show you that real quickly. I have my test authentication service, which you can see is isValidLogin. It just is hard-coded here, and I think that's okay. It'll allow me to test a true-false on this, which is good code coverage, which is because it only returns a Boolean. And then my interface in here is an iAuthentication service, has one method, isValidLogin. So the key concept here is I am testing a login. I'm not testing a user. The login is completely separate. And so if we look at this, authentication, or is this user authentic? Is this user, because we know there's a user there. Are they who they say they are? So we only want to test the login. We want to be very clear with that. We're not testing the user in this case. So we have a method here, isValidLogin. We implement it here in our test, and let's run this and make sure it works. And hopefully it will. And it does. So now what I want to do is I want to make sure that the, since it's a Boolean here, I want to make sure that the opposite works as well. So let's write that test. I want to make sure this test will fail now using an invalid username and password, pulling a page from Scott Hanselman's book, naming my my information Pooh and Pooh. One of these days I'll ask him why he likes to use those as variable names. And it's passed. Okay, so good. We're off to a good start. What I want to do now is take on the second part of my unit testing here, which is to create an authorization service. Here's my first test for testing authorization with the application. So what I'm doing here is I've done the same thing I did before. I created an interface, an implementation, and one single method is superadmin. That is all I know that I need right now is a person during development, like me, has to go in and create products, work on the system, create members, do everything. So as time goes by, I'll probably augment this implementation. For right now, I just have a simple test. So I created the classes, as you can imagine here. Just have a single method, returns a Boolean based on a username. And next up I have a single test that throws, or excuse me, a single implementation test, authorization service, that throws as it should. So now what I want to do is I want to just come back here and really quickly run the test, make sure that it does fail. I have an assertion here that just makes sure that the Boolean fails, and it does. So now what I'm going to do is come back here, and all I'm going to do is return a simple test here. Username dot equals, and this is just simply going to be test user. Okay, there we are. And so now this test should pass. And let's do that really quickly. So I'm so used to using tdd.net, right-clicking and going, and good. We have green lights. So now what I want to do is make sure that this Boolean is covered, and we'll test the opposite. Okay, I've rewritten the test here. I've rewritten this to read authorization service can authorize test user as super admin. That's just the way I'm implementing it now. And the opposite is here, so I'm going to run both of these tests here to make sure that they pass. And the first one does, that's good. I have a second assertion here where I'm testing that it's false. And that's good as well. Okay, a lot of people say, why do you keep testing that your test service is returning certain values? You have to, because at some point I'm going to switch this over and I'm going to start doing some higher logic. I need to make sure that both of these things are true. Okay, well, this, you generally get the idea of what I'm doing now. And I'm going to split this again now into a personalization. But I don't really have any personalization to speak of, short of the concept of a first name and last name. So to implement that, what I need to do now is shift my concept here to something beyond primitive, sending primitive information back and forth. In other words, sending in strings and returning back a Boolean. If I'm going to have a first name and last name, those are two separate bits of information, I'm going to also want to have a user. I'm going to want to have an email with that as well, because every user, I just know this is going to happen, is going to require an email. So right now, what I need to do is have, yes, another set of tests here, defining that a user can exist and defining some basic properties. So let's write that. All right, here's my new test. Actually, this is an old one. This is my existing user test class. This might look like I'm taking a big fat step backwards. Just basically defining my user here. It just says user has these properties. This is the first test I wrote before. And one thing you'll notice is the user class here that I created to make this test pass is really simple, but it's lost a lot of what it used to have, which is the concept of a shopping cart and roles and all this other stuff is anonymous and so on. And it actually is, this refactoring is really making me happy, because the user is losing the concept of authorization attached to it. That shouldn't really have that kind of thing. So we should be always asking a service, hey, is this user authorized to do these things? So in this case, I'll talk about more as we tie these things all together, but what I want to do right now is make sure that this passes. And hopefully it will, and it does, and that's good. So my next step here is to create a personalization service that will go ahead and find this user for me out of a personalization repository. So that's my next step. I'm creating my personalization service right now, and I wanted to show you one really cool thing about ReSharper that I'm learning to like a lot. I don't mean this to be an infomercial for ReSharper, but it's kind of cool when something helps you write code a lot faster. So notice here that all this is red, can't resolve the symbol personalization service. Well, one of the fun things is that, you know, now I'm going to come in here, I'm going to add this. Now I'm going to create the interface and then the implementation of it. And so what I can do, I can come in here and tell it to create a new interface as soon as I can find it in the non-alphabetized thing here. Oh boy, there it is. Okay, so I'm going to call this iPersonalization service. And so I'll make this public. Well, the fun thing is that when I come back here to my test, if I hover over this, you can see it saying, hey, are you talking about this one? And I say, yeah. So I click it. Notice how it turns blue. It found it. It added a using statement for me. Kind of nice. Also grays out the code I'm not using to trim things out a little bit. And so now I need to implement this. And so what I was really hoping is that I could right-click and somehow have it do it for me. I might be able to do that. One of you wonks out there might be able to add a comment to my blog and say, oh, all you got to do is blah, blah, blah. Well, anyway, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to add a new class. I'm going to call this Test Personalization Service, just like that. And ReSharper is going to complain that it's not following the proper class structure here. And, well, you know, that's okay. And so it knows kind of what we're trying to do here, which is really fun. So I can come in here and set this to iPersonalization Service. And if you go to the trouble of spelling it out, it'll find it for you. That's fun, because it'll pop a using statement up there for you. And now that it's done, I can use Visual Studio's refactoring. Or no, where is it? I can go to interface. Where the heck is it? Oh, well, because I don't have anything in iPersonalization Service. So now I can come down here and I can just put in public. I don't need to do that, actually. I'm going to have it return a user. And see, it asked me again, which one are you talking about? And it's asking me now, at least these two of them. So I'm going to say, well, I'm going to use that one. Anyway, user. And then I can just say get user. And I'm going to do this by username. There we go. And so that is an interface signature. So now if I come back over here, I can use implement interface. And you can see that's not ReSharper, that's just Visual Studio. It's in there, it's going to throw, which is nice. And so it's also cool because some people like Jeff Atwood don't like region end region, so you can remove that stuff. But anyway, it's pretty easy to implement this. And one of the neat things about ReSharper is it tells you when you got redundancies, it grays it out, so we can terse up our code. Anyway, so there you are. And now what I can do is come back here, I can run my test. You can see all the colors have changed. That is again Visual Studio. And so I can run this test. Hopefully I don't have any build errors in there. I very well may. And then it should fail because I don't have I have a not implemented exception. So that's exactly as I wanted it to be. So that's really good news. So I just wanted to show you that handy little tip. Alrighty, so now I have my test service here, just returning a simple user by username. And so now what I want to do is make sure my test runs. And so in case, again, once you're wondering, why am I doing this? Well, it's just to verify that this works right here, this iPersonalization service, because this is a mock, or not really a mock, a stub. I will be switching this out later and using all good stuff, using an implementation of it, which I will test. But for right now, I just want to test that this works. So I'm just going to return a new user here. Whoops, no, I'm not, because I have to go back here and change that. You might be wondering, why in the world am I just running this ridiculous test? I'm complete control of the data here. And the answer is, I just want to test that this exists. That's it. It's my first step. So this test mandated the existence of it. This is TDD. Now what I'm going to do is, as I build out functionality, this is my core test, I will start implementing specific functionality to each thing. And so that is the next bit. I finished refactoring the personalization service, and now I'm right back to where I used to be with the old application and the things it was doing. But what's become apparent to me is that I'm going to need to change a few things around, and I'll talk about that in the coming episode when I go to implement orders. But for right now, suffice to say, all the tests I need for personalization are these three here, and they're basically testing to make sure that the repository and the service are working the way they should be working. And without diving too deeply into it, I did just want to show you that my personalization repository has one method on it, iQueryable, that returns users, and it does nothing more, but it will do more later. I've stubbed out a SQL personalization repository for right now. I'm not sure how that's going to play out, so I'm going to table this whole personalization stuff until I refactor out the interface, the website, that is. Now, you might be wondering why is the website driving this whole thing, and that's because what I'm going to be doing next here is the whole order process. It's quite involved, and there's some things I want to consider, such as OpenID. In fact, coming up next in this next segment here, I'm talking to John Galloway and implementing OpenID into the website. That brings in a whole bunch of considerations in terms of what is a user, how are they authenticated, they're authenticated outside the system, what does a user mean to me anyway? And so I am just kind of refactoring back to the point where I was, but sort of leaving it loose, knowing that I'm going to change things as I go. So I'm going to just tie this up in a nice little bow right now. Next up, I want to talk about OpenID, what it is, and how to implement it. I'm joined today by John Galloway once again. John, thanks for coming on.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Yay. Okay, well, what we're going to do today is I was just walking John through the project, and I'm showing him the things I'm refactoring in terms of membership. And this is great because one of the things about refactoring is once you start breaking things apart and it starts to make sense, like little building blocks, you start to see shapes and patterns emerge, and you say to yourself, oh my goodness, I can also do blah. Well, one of those also I can do blah things is OpenID. And John has been implementing OpenID in, I guess, a number of projects. One in particular, this blogging thing.
Subtext. Geez,
some hackish Yeah, so you just implemented OpenID for subtext. That's awesome. So how did it go?
It went well. And to be honest, once I got into it, most of the work was in, you know, hooking up properties to stored procedures to database fields inside of subtext, and really the actual work of making subtext OpenID enabled was almost kind of a non-issue.
Cool. Really. So in a nutshell, what the heck is OpenID?
OpenID is an authentication system. It's built kind of around not a single point. It's built around a specification for how you how a site can authenticate to another site. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't, it's not like there's one central place for OpenID authentication. So
so it's basically a set of, let's say, standards, or a standard of authentication, and multiple sites implement this. Is that right?
Exactly.
Okay. So I was just about to ask you, what the heck is the difference between this and Passport? And I think that answers that question.
That's exactly it, yeah. Okay. And that's, I mean, you know, there's always kind of the, you know, there's some distrust of Microsoft. You know, people didn't want to trust all their information and all their identity to Microsoft. But on a fundamental level, people don't want to entrust all that information to, they want some choice over who they entrust that to, regardless of who it is.
Sure.
So the nice thing with OpenID is it's very open and friendly, and you can move it where you want, and it's not very top-down, it's very bottom-up.
Interesting. There's a lot of providers, as we talked about, and one of them, this is one I use. Which one do you use?
I use my OpenID also.
Okay. And again, this is, as I'm going along here, I keep having the caveat that this is not a commercial or infomercial for Product X. I've been saying that about ReSharper all day because I'm actually growing quite enamored with it. But with my OpenID, I just came here because it was one of the first ones that I heard of. So this is what it looks like. You have all kinds of things. Like, it tells you recent activity, what you've logged into. But now I'm on my account page, and you know, you can manage email addresses, all kinds of things here that I can do. My identity pages, my registration personas. I love this. You can load up a picture. Information about first name, last name, gender, all this good stuff.
Well, and one important thing that you're pointing out there is that you can have multiple personas. And that's mm-hmm. something that people have come up with later, is that maybe I have my work persona, I have my, you know, whatever. I'm really into knitting, so I have my knitting persona. I'm not really into knitting. But, you know,
That picture you sent me with the little hat and teacup, I don't know.
Right, well, yeah, there's that. So, but you know what I'm saying, we have different things where maybe with my bank, I want to have one persona, which is all financial and my accounts, but that has no real relevance in my work. So.
Oh, good point. Okay, well, if we come down here to my domains, let's see, which one? Oh, is it the site directory? Where does it show the sites that you are linked to? Is it your affiliate sites? Oh, I should know this, but I don't come in to the site very much.
I forget. I guess account history would be one place.
Here it is. So account history, visited sites, and this is it tells you where you're logged into and so on. And you can see these are the three things that are hooked up: alt.net.org, surprise, surprise, Hanselman's blog, and I'm going to show you that in a second. And then our own forums use this community server, which uses OpenID, which is great. So let's jump over to Scott Hanselman's site and show you what OpenID looks like. First off, he wrote a really cool weekly source code showing you all about OpenID. And one of the neat things that he has here is the OpenID selector, which I'll show you in just a second. But it really makes logging in and using OpenID a snap.
Well, and one really important thing to point out there, too, with that ID selector is that, sure, my OpenID is great. And I think you and I both started using it because a lot of other places have been slow to adopt it. But now, there's so many, you don't really need to go anywhere. I mean, chances are you've got a Flickr account or a Yahoo account or, you know, I don't know, Technoddy maybe. And so or VeriSign. So you probably already have, you know, an OpenID account somewhere. You just need to know that you've got it.
Okay, so I have to go to a new blog post here. Comments were closed because, well, Scott just gets inundated by comments every day, evidently. But this one only has 6 comments. This is the one he just posted today. And here, look, it remembers me, which is kind of nice. And this is his selector. And it will allow me to sign in with anything. And it remembered me with all this information. And so I'm verified, which is great. So if you go to a site and say, remember me, and you have your OpenID, then boom, you're in there. And you don't have to repetitively remember over and over and over and over, which is kind of nice. Did I capture that properly?
Yeah. Well, I think what's cool is you have an account with Scott, but Scott doesn't have your password, right?
Yes.
So you have accounts all these different places, alt.net.org. You have identity there, but you don't have a separate account. So you don't have to manage a username and password at 90 different places. But those places don't treat you like some anonymous person.
Using OpenID, I would imagine, involves some web services, remote calls, which isn't terribly hard, but the wiring of it, I don't know if I really want to get into. And that's where, I don't know if it's you or somebody else tipped me off to .NET OpenID. You've used this, right?
I have, yeah. So I use that in setting it up in, first of all, if you look at the list of people that have worked on this, it's a pretty good list, which is nice.
There's that Scott guy again.
Scott Watermasick, Hanselman, these are all people that have used it, and Joe Brinkman. So these are people that are using this in large applications, which is cool.
Joe Brinkman, forget.
Yeah. Close that tab. there's two different ways you can implement .NET OpenID. Mm-hmm. And one is as a library, which just has some authentication methods where you can say, here's my claim ID, authenticate true or false. You know.
And when you say claim ID, you're talking about the service URL,
yeah.
Right? And that service URL, just to make sure everybody knows, is your username at usually username.whateverprovider.com. Generally, that's the flow. Would you agree with that?
Mostly, although some of them will do, AOL.com/whatever.
Okay. But so this is the claim ID. I'm sorry to derail you, but
yes.
Go on.
So the people that get into this, that's the URI that you're claiming. So then you're saying, this is my claim. And then you go in and log into that claim. So nobody else should be able to claim that same ID.
Okay, interesting. All right, cool. Wow, Joe Brinkman, I'm still tripping on that. Isn't he making didn't he make John McCain's website?
I can't answer that.
Isn't Joe Brinkman John McCain? Never mind. So one last thing that I thought was really, really fun that you just mentioned to me, and Barry Dornan's going to be very stoked about this, a.k.a. Blowdart. My OpenID, among others, I think others do this as well, you can use CardSpace.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, and what's funny is that CardSpace and OpenID, in a way, are competitors. Mm-hmm. And in another way, are cooperating. So they're competitors in that they're both different authentication mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And so ideally, I think Microsoft and other people who are into CardSpace, definitely Barry, would hope that websites would directly implement CardSpace. And you could just go to the thing and there's no OpenID middleman.
Before getting started with an OpenID implementation, you want to be sure that you have an account set up. Mine's over at myopenid.com, but there's lots of others like Flickr, Technorata, Yahoo, and so on. So whichever one you use is up to you. I headed over to .NET OpenID, and I downloaded the source here, and the source I'm going to be using is 2.2 version. And so it was really easy. I just added the DLL into the dependencies and then added a reference into the application. Finally, I'm going to be using ID Selector, and this is a pretty handy little JavaScript widget. It's all of two lines of script code. They manage everything, and you just simply point it to the text box that you're going to be using. I'll show you that in just a second. Finally, if you need any advice on how to get this to work with ASP.NET MVC, you can head over to blog.nerdbank.net. This is Andrew Arnott's blog, and he's one of the primary developers of .NET OpenID. In fact, right here, he's got some great code for using OpenID with ASP.NET MVC. Okay, so here's what I'm going to do for right now. Take a look at the code. I'm simply going to spike this for right now, just to see how easy it is to work with it and get it set up. I'm going to be using the index page here, the index view of the home controller, and I've created two methods with the home controller: OpenID login and just regular login. Now I know I should be writing a test for this, and I could probably use water and all that other stuff to do it. The problem is .NET OpenID relies heavily on HTTP context to run web requests, so I started doing that. I started writing tests, and everything failed because even if I mocked HTTP context up, I still needed to send out redirect actions and so on from code. So, unfortunately for me, I'm going to have to do this visually, and that's okay because it's a very visual thing. Okay, well, my first step was to take this code here that that Andrew wrote up, this stuff right here, and to kind of plumb it into my application, except what I wanted to do is I wanted to implement it using iAuthentication service. So this is in my services directory here because I want to be able to use this somewhere else, obviously. What I'm simply redoing here is I'm opening up OpenID relay thing, and what I'm doing then is if the response is null, I'm just sending off a request. I'm basically doing a redirection. That's where the HTTP context magic is happening. If the response isn't empty, and again, this is where the HTTP context magic is happening, then I'm able to check the response status and see if it's authenticated. If it's not right here, I'm not throwing, I'm not doing anything, I'm just saying false. And it could be, you know, it could be canceled, it could be a number of different things. Handle this as you want. I'll probably buff this code out a little bit more in the future. Also, a final note here is notice we can't register. We can't do any of that. This is a one-way ticket. We ask, they respond. Okay, well now what I need to do is I'm going to implement some code. The first thing I'm going to do here is I'm going to head over to OpenID Selector. And I'm going to grab an ID selector, and the way you do this is you log in using their selector. So you just put in your URL here, and when I say sign in, it's going to sign me in with my OpenID, and I'm going to agree to the services here. Now, I know that the ID selector team is on this, but what's been happening to me lately is I've been getting this 500 error, so if that happens to you, know that I've already sent them an email harassing them, but it's pretty quick and dirty stuff. So what I did to get around this is I borrowed somebody's, and I won't say who. So I have the code. It's basically just a set of script tags, and to implement it, I'm going to come back in here, and again, I'm on my index page, and I'm going to implement some code, so let's see that. Okay, here is my HTML page that I'm going to work with now. Let's see, the first thing I'm doing is I'm embedding everything in a form. Now, this is interesting. Normally what I'd want to use is an HTML helper for this, but I'll show you why that is a little problematic, at least at this point right now. What I need to do is I need to navigate to a given controller in action, so that's easy enough. But what I also need to do is append in a return URL here. I need this as part of the action. So I've hard-coded this in here. I'll have a helper do this for me later. This is just to illustrate the point of how you do this. So anyway, just to reconfirm here, I will have the return URL as part of the action of the form, and I'm going to put it in using a helper. Right now it's just hard-coded. And I'm setting the method to post, and for all you for all you folks out there who hate it when I don't have valid HTML, there it is. Okay, and what I've done is I just said, okay, please log in, and for your convenience, blah, blah, blah. I tell them what OpenID is. Probably want to buff that sentence out a little bit. But this here is the code they give you when you get all set up with the ID selector. Pretty simple. Next up, this is a script that does the magic, and this basically sends off a request to a remote script source, idselector.com, and then you pass it in a token. And that token is generated for you, and there you are. And so again, this is borrowed, so you probably want to get your own. Okay, and that's it. Finally, down here, just to round things out nicely, I've added in a regular HTML form where people can log in using standard login stuff. Okay, so we run this now. And here you can see the page, and this is pretty standard looking stuff. We just saw this. Look at that. Just as easy as that. You drop a couple lines of JavaScript and a text box in, and that's what you get. So if we take a look at the source now, and I'll bring this down so you can see it, and if we take a look at the form, you can see this is good. This is the action that I'm going to be sending all this form post results to, and then it's appended on return URL, which is exactly what I want, which is great. And then finally, you can see the other bits here lined up the way I want them to. Okay, so right now, what I want to do here is I am going to write some controller code, because as it stands, you can take a look at my home controller, I've got nothing. So what I'm going to do is write some quick and dirty code to pass this stuff off to the authentication service. Here's my code to handle the login information, and this is a little strange stuff, so I'm going to take a minute to explain it. What I'm doing is I'm creating the authentication service as a new instance of OpenID authentication service. I'm asking for the claimed URL. Now, this is where I have to go by a little bit of convention. The claimed URL I'm reading from the request, openid.claimedid. Now, this is for a reason why I named it like this. And if you come back here to the page, you can see with my HTML text box, I call it openid.claimedid. This is because that is what OpenID calls the user's URL. So when they send information back to you, it comes back in the query string, and I'll show you that in a minute, but it comes back as this. So I want to be able to read it in my controller once, and I'll show you what I mean by that in just a second. So I create a new URI here, and then I pass everything off to the OpenID authentication service. And again, I already went through that, but just to go over it one more time, that does the magic here and returns the result back. Now what you're going to see is that this home controller gets called twice. What's actually happening is we're doing a web request ping pong back and forth. I send a request over to the server there, and it bounces back a big long URL full of tokens telling me if it's good to go. So what I want to do just for this is to set a breakpoint so you can see how this is going to work. And so let's go ahead and run the site here. You don't need this control here. You don't need this bit of JavaScript to make OpenID work. I don't know if I made that terribly clear. But you can just use a simple text input. The only thing that's important is this URL here. Also, what's monumentally important is the HTTP part of it. If you don't use HTTP and you just send in spookydeuce.myopenid.com or whatever your URL is, you will get a failure. Secondly, a neat thing to notice is it remembered my URL from the work I've been doing previously here. JavaScript sets a little cookie on your, or the JavaScript of the control will set a little cookie and will just magically know who you are. Okay, so let's hit login and see what happens. Alright, so here we are in the controller, and it's real simple stuff, at least to start with here. We're just creating a new service. We're pulling in the claimed URL, openid.claimedid. Okay, so I create a URI. And then I pass it off now to the service, and the service is going to create the new .NET OpenID bits, and then it's going to check and see if the response is null. This is where, again, that magic happens with HTTP context. So it's kind of doing some background spelunking. And so it is null, as a matter of fact. So we're going to redirect off to the provider, which in my case is my OpenID. And the provider just answered back. And now notice again, we are invoking the same controller. So what it did is it bounced right back to the URL that called it, which is slash home in my case, and then it invoked this controller here, OpenID login, which is great, or excuse me, invoked this action. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to step through the same stuff. The interesting thing here is the claimed URL now has been populated by my OpenID, and that is why I'm using this naming convention here. This is the name that they use. So now I know what the claimed URL is. I can again send it back down. We notice again it's the same thing. I can send it back into the service, and that's what I'm about to do. So we hop into the service here and we check the result. We instantiate the .NET OpenID stuff, and again it's using the HTTP context, but this time the response is not null. And you can see the status is authenticated and the claimed identifier is my URL, which is nice. And so now what happens is it's going to check the status, make sure it's authenticated. In this case it is. It's setting the Boolean return result, and that is exciting stuff. So now what I'm going to do is, since it's authenticated, I get to redirect to with forms authentication. So here's where the interesting thing comes in. I can't come back and show you the URL because it hasn't yet refreshed in the browser. But what I can do is open up the immediate window down here and show you. If I say request .URL. Notice now that the URL that was passed back here, this guy, has a lot of information in it. So this is basically web request ping pong. I've sent a bunch of information to them, they're sending a bunch of information back to me, but right now what's really important to me is this right here. And the good reason, the good thing is that I was able to pass in the forms authentication token here, return URL. This is something ASP.NET uses, return URL. So that once a user's authenticated, they get returned back out. Now again, I hard-coded this. You don't want to do that. I won't be doing that. But what's neat is my OpenID returned this information back to me, which is nice. And so now I can use it, or I should say, Forms Authentication can use it, and it's going to set a little cookie, and it's going to set my username as my OpenID. So if I hit go, it's going to redirect me off to my main store page. If I open up the browser here, and you can see I'm back there. I am recognized by the site. Yippee-yah-hooray. That's as easy as it is to set up OpenID into your website. Now, a couple things I know. I don't want to be referring to users like this, and so what I'll probably do is have to figure out a way to know who this user is, or maybe if it's OpenID, I don't know. I just don't want to be using a URL up here. Maybe I won't even say hi. Who knows? But that's how you put OpenID into your site. Thank you.